Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. They're tiny but mighty. Dear tick-borne Lyme disease has overtaken Ohio, which, with cases more than tripling over the last 2 years, what has changed and what can we do to stop it? What starts with a bullseye rash on the bite spot or nothing noticeable at all, it can devolve into anything from a simple fever to memory loss and joint pain, even to hospitalization. With singer Justin Timberlake recently announcing he is suffering from Lyme disease, more and more eyes are on this lesser-known illness. Joining us now is Rich Gary, state entomologist at the Ohio Department of Health. Thanks for joining us today, Rich.
You're welcome.
So how worried does the average Ohioan need to be about ticks and Lyme disease?
Well, I would say that the average Ohioan, when you're outdoors in tick habitat, should just be vigilant about checking for ticks. I don't think it should necessarily curb any of your outdoor activities, but that, you know, to take, you know, there are precautions you can take to prevent ticks from attaching, and then also doing a thorough tick check once you're back indoors.
Does just using normal bug spray that you buy anywhere, does that keep ticks off of you?
There are a variety of repellents that are available. I recommend, when people ask me about this, I usually recommend that they check out the US EPA's website, epa.gov, and search for repellents. They have a nice online tool there that can help you pick the right repellent for the type of activity that you're doing. As far as repellents such as DEET, those can be effective on exposed skin areas. However, I think probably the best for ticks would be to use something like a permethrin spray on clothing. Now, permethrin is not to be applied directly to skin, but you can put it on clothing, and it will survive a couple of washes in the washing machine. Or you can also buy impregnated clothing with permethrin that is pretty effective against ticks.
So when we talk about Lyme disease, not every tick is carrying Lyme disease. It just seems like it because we're talking about it so much.
Right. The tick that's responsible for carrying Lyme disease is the black-legged tick. And this is a tick that we've been looking for this tick. We had been looking for this tick back when I started around 2000 with the department. And it wasn't until 2010 that we saw our first, what I would call a population of black-legged ticks. And that was in eastern Ohio. And since then, we've been monitoring, and it has pretty much spread across the state since then. And it has become one of our more common ticks. Used to be the American dog tick was the most common tick that people encountered. Now the black-legged tick is right there with it.
So the deer tick that can carry Lyme disease, cases of Lyme disease have more than tripled over the last 2 years. What changed in the last 2 years to cause that? Just more of them?
The change has actually been coming on for quite some time. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, when we first saw the ticks established in eastern Ohio and saw that it was beginning to spread, we knew that Lyme disease was going to become much worse in Ohio over time. You know, when you look at states to the east of us, such as Pennsylvania, they still even now have, you know, easily 10 times the number of Lyme disease cases that we have in Ohio. So what we're seeing is, you know, the cases are starting to increase very rapidly here in Ohio. We expect that trend to continue.
Now, what are the symptoms of Lyme disease? Because when you read the list, it's like everything.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's true for a lot of tick-borne and mosquito-borne diseases, that the early symptoms tend to be fairly nondescript and somewhat flu-like. You know, with Lyme disease, the classic symptom is the bullseye rash, that is formed, but that only occurs in about 70 to 80% of cases. So you can start out with, you know, something like just fever, headache, fatigue, joint pains. And if you develop these symptoms this time of year, especially after having been exposed to a tick, you know, the recommendation is definitely to seek medical attention, and also to let your doctor know about the tick exposure.
Yeah.
If you know of it.
Well, yeah. So a family member of mine ended up being diagnosed with Lyme disease, but the only symptom that he really had, it's a child, so they don't describe things well, but just two of his fingers hurt, right?
Yeah.
And so he had joint pain in two fingers, but because he's a kid, his mom just thought that he like hit his hand on something, right? So
yeah, it's a tough situation getting Lyme disease diagnosed because the symptoms are so vague, and because the symptoms are so vague and can often, you often don't see that rash. You know, it can be pretty tough to get those diagnosed. And the other thing is, as far as testing goes, you know, if you test for the disease too early, it's an antibody test, and the antibody test may be negative. So there are a lot of challenges with diagnosing Lyme disease.
Is there anything we can do to help prevent the spread of these ticks, or are we just going to have to deal with this?
Well, the ticks have pretty much already spread spread throughout Ohio. But what we are doing at the Department of Health is we work with our local partners to conduct tick surveillance around the state, and so we're collecting ticks, and we're also testing them for Lyme disease and other pathogens. And we test through OSU, through their Buckeye Test Service, and also through CDC. We'll send some of the ticks to CDC. And what we're finding is that the ticks can, the positive rate for black-legged ticks, I call them black-legged ticks, deer ticks, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The positive rate on those ticks varies from about 6% of the ticks in an area being positive up to about half of the ticks being positive. And we're finding that in the eastern part of the state, we're seeing a much higher prevalence of Lyme disease in the ticks that we're collecting.
So you don't have to be in deep woods, too, to have these ticks find you. I mean, can they be in your backyard?
Especially if you have a backyard that backs up to a wooded area or a park area. They do like wooded areas, but also along the edges of woods, grassy areas along the edge of woods, and any brush. So we recommend, you know, especially for people who are spending time in wooded areas and in parks, to sort of stick to the trail. If you're going through a trail, stick to the trail, because these ticks, as well as other ticks, their normal behavior is to kind of hang out alongside the trails that animals use, so that they can kind of catch a ride on animals that kind of walk by and brush against them. So avoiding brushing up against tall brush and sitting in leaf litter is a good idea to avoid these ticks.
So in the fall, don't play in the pile of leaves, maybe.
Right. And you just bring up another point about this tick. Historically, you know, we worried more about Rocky Mountain spotted fever with dog ticks. Mm. And we would tell people that, you know, spring and summer were typically the season to be watchful for ticks. With the black-legged tick, it's active year-round in Ohio. Even in the wintertime, if the temperatures are above freezing, the tick can be active. And we've heard stories when the tick was first becoming prevalent in eastern Ohio, we were hearing stories from deer hunters who were encountering large numbers of ticks during deer hunting season, which is, you know, late November. So
we're calling them deer ticks. Do we have to be around a deer? Like, does a deer have to be involved?
No, the actual role of the deer, the adult ticks, they're called deer ticks because their host for the adult stage is deer or deer-sized animals. So deer do play an important role in supporting the population of ticks, but deer do not have a role in Lyme disease. That's actually the reservoir host, or the host that carries that pathogen is actually a mouse, primarily the white-footed mouse or deer mice in Ohio. Other species may be involved, but those are the principal hosts for the bacteria, and it's in the larval stage or the nymphal stage that the tick will feed on those. And then from then on out, that tick is infected, and anything it bites can contract Lyme disease.
So this is why you want to call it the black-legged tick, because it's not either that, or we need to change the name to mouse tick instead of deer.
Well, I mean, deer tick works. I mean, I think a lot of people know them as deer ticks, but mm-hmm. they're also called black-legged ticks. And that distinction is because there was a time when it was thought to be two different species. Mm-hmm. The northern species was called the deer tick, and the southern species was called the black-legged tick, but it's the same species.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Lyme disease and ticks with Rich Gary, state entomologist for the Ohio Department of Health. Let's spend a few minutes discussing mosquitoes. Okay. We're gonna move on from ticks for a minute. I miss a tick question that you really wanted to talk about?
The only thing I wanted to mention for mm-hmm. listeners is that, you know, we do have a lot of surveillance information that we share on our website, mm-hmm. and we have several URLs that'll get you there, but the shortest one is ohio.gov/ticks. If you just put that in, it'll take you to our website. We have lots of information on prevention, but we also have information on, we put all of our surveillance information up so people can see what we see is going on around the state.
All right. We'll know more about the ticks that we can't seem to stop. So, all right. So let's spend a few minutes talking about mosquitoes and mosquito related diseases. Are there any mosquito borne illnesses here that you've found here in Ohio that we should be aware of?
This is actually the time of year when the mosquito-borne diseases that we have in Ohio, this is sort of the peak time that these diseases can be transmitted. And every year we work with local health departments to monitor mosquito-borne diseases such as West Nile virus, La Crosse encephalitis, which Ohio leads the nation in the number of lacrosse encephalitis cases. So we monitor for those, but we also have Eastern equine encephalitis here in Ohio. And then we also monitor cases of imported diseases that, people may contract while they're traveling, things like malaria, dengue, Zika, chikungunya, things like that.
Okay, so let's... what do we need to be aware of when it comes to these mosquito-borne illnesses? Because I was looking at your site, trying to look at the number of people in Ohio who have each of these, and the numbers seemed all over the place. With West Nile seemed to be the highest number I could find. Is that correct?
That is correct. We also have a number of cases of lacrosse that are reported each year.
You mentioned lacrosse twice. So this is one I don't know. So is it lacrosse, like the sport, lacrosse? Is that what you're saying?
It's actually named after La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Where it was first identified. However, Ohio has probably more cases of lacrosse than any other state historically and each year.
So what is that? Because I've heard of West Nile virus. So what is lacrosse? What happens to you?
Lacrosse encephalitis is an arbovirus very similar to West Nile virus. Mm-hmm. It's transmitted by a different mosquito called the tree hole mosquito, which is a common mosquito here in Ohio, particularly in areas that have beech maple forest where their natural habitat occurs. But humans kind of enhance their habitat by leaving around containers that they can breed in, because these are mosquitoes that breed in tree holes and also any containers, discarded tires, anything left in the yard that can hold water, these mosquitoes can breed in. And there are certain areas of the state where we have seen where we've seen lacrosse encephalitis in the past. And it's very similar to West Nile virus. Anyone can contract it, but whereas you've heard that West Nile virus tends to be more severe in older adults, lacrosse encephalitis tends to be more severe in children and teenagers. Mm. And so this is a disease that we've had in Ohio for many years, and uh, we, We do see a few cases each year. This year has been very rainy, and anytime you have a rainy year, that means those tree holes and containers are constantly getting filled with water, and so it gives those mosquitoes a place to breed. And this is a virus that in nature is normally transmitted between the tree hole mosquito and squirrels and chipmunks, but it can be passed on to humans as well.
Okay. So we have about two or so minutes left. So you're fine. While I have you, you're the state entomologist. So we talked about ticks. We talked to some about mosquitoes. Is there anything else that you want people to know about?
Well, I would say, like I said, with ticks, we also have a website with the short URL for any information you want about mosquitoes, and that is ohio.gov/mosquitoes to get more information about prevention and also surveillance information about what's going on in the state.
Looking at the surveillance information, is that important? Because if you have more than one case in your area, do you need to be more aware? Is that what you mean?
I would say paying attention to surveillance in general. Like, for instance, with West Nile virus, we are seeing an increase. We have had one case reported in Ohio so far this year. However, right now we are seeing an increase in infections and mosquitoes, and that is information that's being shared on our website. And we're also encouraging all of our local partners to put out messaging. So you've probably seen reports from local mm-hmm. health departments who are doing mosquito control and putting out information on how people can protect themselves and keep mosquitoes from breeding around their homes. So that is the value of going to those sites.
Okay, great. And so basically we need, I'm saying great, like, yay, mosquitoes. No, not great. Not great at all. We need to watch for standing water and use bug spray. Try to keep those mosquitoes off of us.
Yep. Use and again, that EPA site is an excellent source resource for finding a repellent that works for your situation.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. We've been talking with Rich Gary, state entomologist at the Ohio Department of Health. And coming up, we're going to talk more about Lyme's disease and other Ohio bugs, including the spotted lanternfly. That is When All Sides Continues. Thanks for joining us, Rich. So,
thank you. Thanks for having me, Amy.
That's When All Sides Continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. You would think that with the name lanternfly, the spotted lanternfly would light up Ohio's parks and forests, but they're doing just the opposite. It's an invasive species in Ohio. The spotted lanternfly has been destroying Ohio's ecosystem, and just like others, they are quite impossible to take down alone. But what can you and your community do about these? This hour, we are talking about pests here in Ohio. We're talking about ticks and mosquitoes, the spotted lanternfly, and more. Joining us now is Tim McDermott, assistant professor and extension educator at Ohio State University. Welcome to All Sides, Tim.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
And then also with us, we have Sarah Short, assistant professor of entomology at Ohio State. Welcome to All Sides, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, Tim and Sarah are here with us for the rest of the show. We'd love for you to call in and ask any questions you have, maybe about Lyme disease, ticks, mosquitoes, other Ohio bugs. You can give us a call at 614-292-8513 or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. Sarah, we've been talking with the state entomologist about ticks and Lyme disease, but what is something you want to mention related to ticks and Lyme disease that you want our listeners to know?
So one thing that Dr. Gary mentioned is protecting ourselves from ticks. So I don't believe he mentioned removing ticks as quickly as possible.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about removing ticks. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So basic safety measures. So if you get a tick bite, what you want to do is make sure that you remove the tick as quickly as you can. if it's crawling on you, you can just flick it off. You don't need to like take any special measures. But if it's embedded in the skin, mm-hmm. you need to get pointy tweezers or a tick removal tool. And then you want to pull straight up without twisting. Try to remove the tick as intactly as possible. Mm-hmm. And then you want to wash the place where it was biting with soap and water. And then put the tick, if you can, in hand sanitizer or alcohol or any sort of sealed container. And the goal there is that we want to be able to identify the tick. So you want to know what was biting you, because as Dr. Gary was talking about, different ticks carry different pathogens and that they cause different diseases. So knowing what type of tick was biting you is really important. So you can actually get your tick identified. You can contact your local public health department, or you can even upload a picture of the tick to Tick Spotters, which is a resource online through the University of Rhode Island. And then you would know what's biting you. And if you would like, you can submit your tick to the Buckeye Tick Test, which is a testing service that individuals can pay $50 for. And you can get your tick tested, you can get it identified, and then you get a nice little report that tells you anything that was inside the tick that the tick was carrying, so that you can take that to your physician. And then, of course, the most important thing is to watch for symptoms and contact your physician if you notice any symptoms of any kind.
Now, I have removed or assisted my husband in removing a tick from each of my children at least once. That to just pull up and keep it intact is easier said than done.
Yes, it really is. So ticks, so fun facts about ticks. They are, as they're feeding on you, they actually produce copious amounts of saliva. So they're sucking and spitting at the same time. And the saliva actually turns into this cement-like substance that glues them into your skin, which makes it really hard to pull them out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If, you know, if the mouth parts or other little bits of the tick are still in your skin, you don't need to dig them out when you're done.
Oh, my son would have wished he would have told me that.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, let's bring you into the conversation here. Can you tell me about what your favorite tick removal technique?
So I like to say that there's one right way to remove them, and then there's every other way. But I think I've heard every other way. Mm-hmm. When I was in practice, people would bring their dogs in. They would be covered in motor oil or kerosene. I remember my wife telling me, she grew up in the woods as well. Her mom would heat up a sewing needle and then stick it on the tick's butt. Like it would like let go and fall off. And research has shown that removing it incorrectly, like if you just grab it by its butt and yank on it, you're probably going to squeeze the gut contents into you and increase the chances of getting sick. So there's the one right way that Sarah was talking about. Then there's every other way.
Now, we were also talking earlier that the bullseye rash appears maybe 70% of the time, but the other 30% it doesn't. So is that another reason, Tim, to have a tick tested to know whether it was carrying Lyme disease?
Yeah, the problem that we would have is when Lyme disease presents, like you said, it might have the bullseye rash, it might not. And then some other symptoms that it might show would be flu-like symptoms. But mm-hmm. there's a whole host of different diseases that will manifest with flu-like symptoms. I go around the state, I do tick talks in lots of places. The doctors that are in the eastern half of the state and the southern part of the state, the prevalence rates for Lyme disease are so high. Anymore, if you come in and you had a tick embedded in you, a lot of them are going to discuss testing, but potentially just put you straight on medication to treat that.
And I like that idea of doing TikToks as opposed to TikTok, like making videos. So you're doing TikToks. What's the main questions that you get asked? What do people want to know when it comes to ticks?
So honestly, a lot of what I do is dispel myths right off the bat when I go out, because the speed of change that we have had in ticks and tick-borne disease in Ohio has been tremendous. We've gone from one tick of medical importance about 10, 15 years ago to 5 now. So for a lot of the audiences I talk to, some of this is brand new. You know, I tell them you can encounter a tick in pretty much any habitat. They might, you know, you might think they like the woods, but there's plenty of them that like a pasture, meadow, mown lawn grass. And then a lot of folks, you know, we concentrate on April through September, and the summer is being the biggest time for us to encounter ticks. And for certain ticks in their life stages, that's true. But you can encounter a tick pretty much any month of the year in Ohio. Mm-hmm. They'll start activity over 38, 40 degrees. And in fact, the newest map from ODH shows the prime deer tick adult time to be active is literally Halloween to Christmas.
Oh, well, I had no idea. And Sarah, the majority of Lyme disease cases are in the northeast quarter of the United States, with Ohio being just about as far west as it goes. Why is that?
Well, that's where the tick is. So I'll also note there's a large population of black-legged ticks in the upper Midwest. So Ohio is sort of being sandwiched between two growing populations of black-legged ticks. So it really used to be the tick was just on the East Coast, New England, but it's been spreading westward, and now we have it in eastern Ohio, and then there's also quite a bit of black-legged tick in the upper Midwest. But as far as I know, that population has not yet descended south and east enough to hit the west side of Ohio.
So that tick, does that carry Lyme disease too?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Were we talking about? I thought we were talking about Lyme disease.
Yes.
Black-legged tick? Yes. The deer tick. Sorry, yes.
Is it the same tick?
That's yes, what it is.
I guess.
I apologize.
So it's the same tick, but it's coming from two different directions?
Yes. And there's two foci. There's like two populations of the tick. And then it's also through southern Canada.
Okay.
So it's sort of like this big, amalgamation of black-legged ticks.
So what, Tim, what recommendations do you have for people, so that they can still feel comfortable going into the woods, playing in a pile of leaves? You know, that's how my son got a tick on him. He was playing in a pile of leaves, but that was super fun, right? Should I not let him play in a pile of leaves when he's visiting cousins in Western Pennsylvania?
Well, honestly, you might want to reconsider playing in a pile of leaves in Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
that is as hot a tick activity spot as we have. But you know, I feel bad at the end. I just want to reassure people, yes, we can go outside. We're not going to spend the rest of our lives just inside. But practicing tick safe behaviors is going to go a long way to keeping yourself safe. So I still go camping. I still go out in the woods. I still go on hikes, but I'm going to use all of the tools in my toolbox to keep ticks safe. So I kind of create that personal protective plan. I like long pants, long sleeves, light colors. Permethrin treated clothes, ideally. Permethrin labeled for fabric will bond to the fabric and last for many washes. And then a topical repellent, you got to kind of be a little bit of a label reader because there's so many out there. So, for example, there's certain ones that are more applicable for adults than for kids. And then making sure that I'm staying sort of out of prime tick habitat. And I hate to say, but leaf piles are like literally the primest tick habitat of them all.
Okay. All right. No more leaf piles. All right. Well, can I send them to a ball pit inside instead?
Perfect.
Perfect. Okay. Sarah, what do you want to say about leaf piles?
Oh, no, sorry. So I let my kids play in leaf piles, but I understand ticks or Tim's hesitation. I did want to mention, you mentioned that, New England has had Lyme for a really long time. It's named after Lyme, Connecticut, which is true. So there has been a lot of research, in that part of the country in ways to, protect yourself and improve prevention of tick-borne disease, especially black-legged tick. And there are ways to improve your yard, for example, to reduce tick exposure. So jumping in a pile of leaves is never going to get any better because the ticks love leaf litter. Mm. But if you search online for ways to, I can't say tick-proof because it's definitely not foolproof, but to tick-improve your yard, there are lots of tips. So you can make, if your yard backs up to a small forested area, which is prime spot for deer and white-footed mice and chipmunks, which is the perfect recipe for Lyme disease, you can make a barrier, for example, along that perimeter. So that part of your yard, so things that ticks don't like to climb over, like wood chips or rocks, and that sort of helps to kind of keep them more in the forested area of the yard and less in your yard. Moving your swing set, away from right up against the tree line, for example, can help quite a bit. Keeping wood piles and other things that those little rodents like to hang out in further away from the house is also beneficial. So there's a lot of tips if you're finding ticks in your yard to reduce the population of ticks in the yard.
What if I live right in the middle of the city and I don't see ticks in my yard? Are they there and I can't see them?
So you're definitely less likely to encounter a deer tick. You may still. So I've found I live right in the middle. I mean, I live in a residential part of the city in like North Clintonville. Mm-hmm. And I found I found dog ticks in my yard.
Oh, don't tell me
I
that.
I found Lone Star ticks in our, you know, in our city parks. So they're definitely here. But I don't know if Tim mentioned doing tick checks. So that's another thing you want to do. You know, if you've been outside playing, just take a look like all of the parts of your body where it might be like warm and safe for a tick, because they don't just like hop on. They don't hop at all. They don't climb onto you and just start biting. They actually will crawl around and find a nice, comfortable place to sit and suck your blood. So it takes them a little while. So you can, you know, check your body and then check like your hairline, check where your clothes touch your skin, check your groin, behind your knees and your belly button, in between your toes. I have seen lots of reports of ticks in the hair of children. So like especially short hair on boys. I'm not entirely sure why, but like multiple people that I've spoken to.
That's where it was on my son.
It's so common. And they just hang out there. They get really big because people don't notice them for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why. Mm-hmm. I think it's because you don't really take a brush through real short
boy hair.
Yeah. So but anyway, yeah, checking all those spots can help a lot.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about ticks and Lyme disease and other bugs with Sarah Short, Assistant Professor of Entomology at Ohio State. Also with us is Tim McDermott, Assistant Professor and Extension Educator at OSU. And listeners, I want you to call in if you have questions about Lyme disease or ticks or other Ohio bugs. We can take a stab at that as well. You can call 614-292-8513 or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. And we have Amy on the line. Amy in Columbus. Great name. What's your question?
Yeah, I enjoy it too. I have my question involves a spotted lanternfly. Mm-hmm. My neighbor's yard abuts mine and has a very flourishing row of Tree of Heaven. Mm-hmm. Not only that, covered with grapevines. And as we know, this is the preferred host and food of the spotted lanternfly. There are seedlings that I yank out on a daily basis in my yard. Is there anything that can be done to, like, report these trees and possibly assist the homeowner to remove these trees? Or am I just reduced to, you know, chopping the branches back and hoping for the best? So
my question is
there anything that can be done to get these trees removed?
All right, Tim, let me turn to you. I'm not sure if you are much of a spotted lanternfly expert, but this is an invasive species, and it has been creeping toward us. It's mostly in the eastern part of Ohio and in western Pennsylvania, but the spotted lanternfly is native to eastern Asia. Can you tell me more about them? Are you familiar?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. It is blowing up my phone and email as well right now. So spotted lanternfly are an invasive pest first discovered around Philadelphia in 2014, first found in Ohio around 2020. And to the caller's question, it loves Tree of Heaven and it loves wild grapevines. And in fact, what it does for its damage is it will feed on grapevines, stone fruit plants, walnut seedlings, and then it can extrude honeydew, which will be attractive to other pests and to develop a sooty mold. So this can be pretty damaging to a lot of the larger components of Ohio's agriculture industry. Mm-hmm. And where we're getting tons of questions right now is just because of through their life cycle. So they have recently moved from their final stage of their larval growth into adults, and boy, they can breed into tremendous numbers. We actually have them now in 18 counties here in Ohio. They expanded the quarantine in May to have six more. The interesting thing is, if you study how they got here from Pennsylvania, when we think about them, they kind of look like a moth or a butterfly, but they're not. They're actually a leaf hopper, more like a grasshopper. So they don't really fly. They jump, and they're really good at it. I was walking down Goodale, and there was one in front of me, and it took me two tries before I could catch it and squish it. Where they're elite at traveling is they're great at riding. They'll ride the train, they'll ride a truck, they'll ride a car. So the distribution pattern in Ohio and throughout the eastern half of the U.S., you can overlay it with the interstate map and the train, major train routes. Hmm. So what can you do? You know, they say just squish them. And that's easy for me to say. There's no real reporting any longer in Franklin County because we've had them now for a little while. And so they do say to residents, you can report them through the ODA's reporting tool, but they're really trying to figure out where the new counties would be so that they can make sure they establish quarantine in those areas, trying to slow down the spread. Controlling ailanthus or tree of heaven is huge. That's its preferred host tree. But in terms of my guidance for him to deal with his neighbor, there's not really a municipal thing to report them to. I would say maybe have a heart-to-heart discussion with the neighbor and talk to them about your concerns and how their vegetation is impacting into your vegetation as well.
Okay, so there's no program right now to get rid of the tree of heaven that you're aware of, is that?
Well, it is on the invasive species list. So if it was, say, in a municipality or right away or something like that, then you could report that where they would start to think about getting that out of there. But it is extraordinarily widespread. It would be like if dandelions were reportable. Yeah. That would be how easy it would be to completely eradicate, because that tree is its own true invasive problem. It spreads super easy. It is difficult to kill. It will reroot off of the stump unless it is killed down. So easier said than done getting rid of ailanthus or tree of heaven.
Oh, wow. Okay. We are going to continue this discussion of the spotted lanternfly, ticks, mosquitoes, and more in just a moment. Staying with us is Tim McDermott, assistant professor and extension educator at Ohio State, and Sarah Short, assistant professor of entomology. We'll talk more about Ohio's pests. And listeners, you can join us 614-292-8513 or send an email to allsides@wosu.org.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Cited as possibly the deadliest outside force to mankind, mosquitoes will always be prevalent in our lives. But how much of a threat are they right now? Serving as one of the most effective disease transmitters from the Zika virus to malaria to West Nile, mosquitoes have evolved and changed throughout the years. Along with them, what other bugs do we have to be on the lookout for? And what do we have to change when we take a look at insect-borne diseases? Still with us is Tim McDermott, assistant professor and extension educator at Ohio State University. Thanks again for being here, Tim.
Thank you.
And also Sarah Short, assistant professor of entomology at Ohio State. Thanks for being here, Sarah.
Glad to be here.
Listeners, if you have questions about mosquitoes, ticks, or other bugs, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We do have a question from Dwight in Delaware. Dwight wants to know about repellent. Can you ask your question, Dwight?
Yeah. Your guest mentioned permethrin-coated or treated clothing, and I see a lot of that out there, but I've always been leery of that because you can absorb that stuff through your skin, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I mean, I know when I put on DEET, I mean, you put on too much DEET, you can literally taste it in your mouth as your body absorbs that stuff, and permethrin is a lot worse than DEET. I just wondered if there's been any studies about, you know, absorbing that stuff through your skin off of this clothing that's treated and stuff that they sell.
All right, there we go. Tim, you talked about wearing this clothing, and also Rich Gary talked about it earlier in the show. So can you tell me about this? Are there any studies? Is it dangerous?
So permethrin has what would be considered generally low absorption through the skin, unlike DEET. when we talk about doing application of permethrin to clothing, you want to make sure that you follow the label so that you do it safely. When I do my permethrin treated clothing, because I have kitty cats and they are viciously susceptible to permethrin toxicity, I take the clothing outside and then I spray it with a permethrin labeled for fabric, and then I let it dry completely before I would wear it. So while there is some research that shows that there might be very low absorption, if it is applied according to the label, then you are doing it as safely as possible.
Okay. So you would still recommend wearing this type of clothing, especially if you spend a lot of time in the deep woods?
I do. The U.S. military has permethrin treated the uniforms of our soldiers for a long time. I guess you have to take it as sort of a cost-benefit analysis. To me, the risk of a tick vector disease or the tick allergy from Lone Star ticks is so high when I'm out in certain parts of Ohio that I want to do everything I can to protect myself against that.
And yeah, Sarah, you want to add more about the clothing?
I just wanted to mention that it doesn't need to touch your skin in order to be effective. So the important thing is that it's touching the ticks. So, you know, if it's not peak summer and you wanted to wear permethrin treated clothing with something underneath it, if you weren't comfortable with it touching your skin, it would work just fine that way. So because the tick
layers
would still touch it. Exactly. Yeah. So that's another option if people are worried about potential contact with permethrin.
Okay. Well, and I wanted to, we also have been mentioning DEET a couple of times. And in my last introduction, I was talking about mosquitoes. So Sarah, what is your recommendation when it comes to protecting ourselves from mosquitoes? I mean, should we be spraying ourselves with the deep woods off?
So, yeah, I mean, it's complete. So I should not. Yeah. Across the board. I'm sorry. So repellent is definitely one of the best things you can do to protect yourself against mosquitoes. The deep woods, the amount of DEET in deep woods is probably not necessary for most people. But it kind of depends on how attractive you are to mosquitoes, how many mosquitoes are in the area, whether or not you would want that level of protection. Dr. Gary referred to the EPA's website that has actually a really great tool for looking at different repellents. DEET is not the only option out there. There's other options like picaridin or oil of lemon eucalyptus that are equally as effective. And it's most of those are effective for many hours, right? So you don't need to be constantly reapplying it. And you know, different levels of DEET, you can get sprays that have, you know, 5%, 10% DEET in it, which certainly they're not as effective as something that has 40% DEET. But for many people, they provide an adequate amount of protection.
Now, mosquitoes love me, right? And they love my daughter too. And the two of us, if we use a like natural bug spray, I mean, we still get bit like crazy. Mm-hmm. So I always go, when I'm going to an outdoor event in anyone's backyard, I bring your own bug spray, like BYOB, you know,
yeah.
Because I need them to stay away from me, right? And so is it true that mosquitoes like some people more than others?
Yes, that is true. So mosquitoes are attracted to lots of things. So long range, they're attracted to the carbon dioxide that we produce. That tells them that there's a mammal over here that is respiring that I want to potentially bite. And then they will also differentiate based on general body shape, like, okay, this is a relatively big thing, like, you know, person versus, you know, something smaller that I might not be as interested in. Many mosquitoes are attracted to dark colors. So if you're the type of person who always wears black, the mosquitoes are going to fly toward you and potentially feed on you. They're also attracted to volatiles that our skin produces, and different people just have different genetic signatures that cause our skins to produce different amounts of the chemicals that tell mosquitoes that we are people and that we're tasty. And then the bacteria on our skin produce volatiles, and different skin microbiotas are differentially attractive to mosquitoes as well. So yeah, different people are differently attracted. You mentioned natural mosquito repellents. There are, as I mentioned, there are different. So if you're looking for something like oil of lemon eucalyptus, it's not DEET, and it's equally as effective as DEET for equally as long. So that's an option for someone who's looking for something that's a little bit more, quote, natural. But there are a lot of repellents that have like plant-derived oils, and some of those are effective and some of them are not. So again, I recommend that that resource through the EPA, because they have efficacy information there as well.
We have an email from Bob in Richfield, and he's wanting to know, should dogs be medicated year-round for ticks instead of just in the summer months? Tim, would you like to take that?
So I do recommend that if it is in the budget, that you would work with your veterinarian to make sure you're using the best product that fits in that budget to keep your four-legged friends tick safe. And it really comes down to a couple of things. One, dogs are walking tick drags when they are outside. They are just tick magnets, and they don't really do a thorough tick check when they're done. They can pick up a large number of them out there. There's a number of different diseases that can be transmitted to dogs from tick bites. You know, when we talk about Lyme disease and we think about people, dogs, cats, and horses can all get Lyme disease as well. So if you look at that map, the life cycle curve that they just came out with last September from ODH, we have tick activity all 12 months of the year, and you can encounter a deer tick outside in December. That's actually one of its highest periods of activity. So if it's in the budget, I do recommend it.
Sarah, let's talk about mosquitoes more a little bit. We've seen some cases of different mosquito-borne illnesses. As someone who studies mosquitoes, what do you want most Ohioans to know about when it comes to mosquitoes and like the diseases they can carry, as opposed to just biting you and it's itchy and that, you know, is annoying?
Yeah, so different mosquitoes carry different diseases, same with ticks. So you're not going to get the same level of exposure everywhere. If you're traveling, especially to tropical parts of the world, you're going to need to think quite a bit harder about what potential mosquito-borne illnesses you might encounter. Tropical areas have a much higher rate of mosquito-borne disease transmission and a lot more mosquito-borne diseases than we have in Ohio. Within Ohio, I think Rich Gary mentioned the two that I would want people to know about, West Nile and La Crosse. I really like telling people about La Crosse because most people have never heard of it. The incidence in general is extremely rare, you know, so maybe we'll have a dozen cases.
Or is it a flu-like symptom situation
Yeah,
too?
but it can, so when it gets serious, it can cause like swelling of the brain and it can cause death. So, you know, children do die of La Crosse encephalitis virus. So it's a dangerous disease. It's the most, as far as I know, I don't want to misspeak. But yeah, and Ohio has, as Dr. Gary mentioned, the highest number of cases, not the highest incidence in the country, but we have the highest number of cases every year that we report. So yeah, I like people to know about La Crosse that is out there. I don't want you to be scared of it, but you know, just to be aware.
And basically, do you tell people that, you know, most of the time when you get bit by a mosquito, it's just going to be itchy and you're not going to get a horrible disease,
Yes, I don't want people to be terrified of going outside. You know, I go outside all the time. I don't wear mosquito repellent all the time. Many of us have had West Nile virus and didn't know about it. Most of the time when people have West Nile, it's asymptomatic. So, you know, keeping that in mind. But yeah, you know, it can happen. So if you're going to be in a place where you anticipate getting a lot of mosquito bites, it's not a bad idea to wear repellent.
All right, and Tim, we have two questions for you. We have an email from Marty in Westerville who wants to know how they can schedule a TikTok with you.
So I have a number of them already recorded online. I just did one where I can share a link for that, but you can reach out to me. And so for pretty much anybody in Ohio, I share a PowerPoint on where we're at with the state of ticks in Ohio each fall with my colleagues in all 88 counties, because we use that for lots of different audiences like cattlemen's and master gardeners and pesticide applicators. So anybody in Ohio can contact their extension office to see if their ag educator would be able to do that for them. And it's basically countyname.osu.edu. So you can find me at franklin.osu.edu. And I would be happy to do a Franklin County TikTok because, you know, when you think about where ticks are, you always kind of think about rural, but we got plenty of ticks in urban environment. It's in fact, all five ticks of medical importance in Ohio have been found here in Franklin County. So send me an email. And then what's the second part of the question?
Oh, the second question was back to the spotted lantern fly, because we're deviating back and forth between all the things we're talking about. Is squashing them and killing them what we're supposed to be doing, even though they're a little bit pretty, and if people feel bad about killing bugs, but is that what we're supposed to do?
Yes, we need everybody to harden their heart that way because these are a true invasive pest that can cause tremendous damage to a number of very important crops for Ohio's ag industry. So don't feel guilty about squishing them.
And are we going to start seeing more and more of them since we're seeing a little bit of spotted lanternfly here and there? Because I mentioned earlier, I spend a lot of time in Western Pennsylvania, and there's certain parts of Western Pennsylvania where they cover everything. There's a lot of them. It was mind-boggling to me.
Unfortunately, they don't really have a natural predator. They are really only in their infancy in terms of spreading through Ohio. We're in year five, and we seem to be doubling the counties as we go. So I anticipate we're going to see more of them, I hate to say.
Okay. Do they die in the winter?
No. So their life cycle is, adults are going to complete their life cycle, but what they're going to do is they're going to lay eggs, and those eggs are going to overwinter to then hatch into those larval stages in the spring.
Okay. Well, when there's more here, we'll have you back and we'll talk about it again. I want to thank you, Tim McDermott, Assistant Professor at Ohio State. Thank you for joining us, Tim.
Thank you.
And Sarah Short, Assistant Professor of Entomology at Ohio State. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.